And give them all a nice round of applause. This is not an easy format. It's really not. Like a debate or a panel or a wrestling match or something. Just shake hands and have a seat and get comfortable.
I thought it was crop rotation.
It is. This is the original crop rotation right here. And everybody, take a swig of water. That would be a healthy thing to do. We're going to bounce a couple of... Because now this is like a dinner banquet. We have to decide whose glass is whose. All right. Now we've all... Did you lose one, Gerald?
No, that's all right.
You're all right?
I'm from Nebraska. I'm used to people stealing our water.
That's right. Wow. Wow. Man, I hate it when the panel's funnier than I am. I really do. I hate that. But
that should have been my line. I'm from Oregon, where California's stealing our water.
Yeah, that's right. That could have applied to a lot of us.
From South Dakota.
Oh, look. South Dakota is passing the water. Yeah, so... All right.
I wonder what they want in return.
They'll want something, I can guarantee you. They'll want something. Now, here's what we'd like to do here. I want to bounce out. Now, all the topics that we talked about, really, they sounded specific. They're not really. There's so much overlap and cross. But there are a couple of big issues that I'd like to just have a little panel debate here. And there's no rhyme or reason, no turn-taking. If somebody, if you want to jump in, then, you know, slap the guy next to you and jump right in. But there's a term that we use a lot.
Carl, slap him for me, will you?
Yeah, I got the big guy on my side. See. But we use this term all the time, and it gets bantered around. Sustainable agriculture. What is it? Who are we? What is sustainable agriculture? I'd like to hear a little foray discussion on that topic, as I know our guests out here would. But who are we? What is sustainable agriculture? Because there's a lot of people, particularly back east, particularly in one particular city, particularly where there's a house and a Senate, that maybe have a different picture of what sustainable agriculture is. And until we identify that, that certainly directs our policy patterns. So it's a free-for-all, gentlemen.
Well, you know, typically the nomenclature sustainable agriculture gets attached to things like quaint little farms, you know, small acreages, you know, LISA, low input sustainable ag. The truth of sustainable ag is that it's all about economics. You know, in Nebraska, say for instance you had a 160-acre farm, and since this is a fairy tale anyway, we're going to assume that you were given the farm, all the equipment, and you know all you have to do is farm it and make a living. Well, if you raise 160 acres of corn and you get 100 bushels of the acre, you wind up selling it for $352, you get about $50,000 income. Well, in Nebraska, between federal income tax, state income tax, self-employment tax, Social Security tax, you're going to pay out 35% of that $50,000. So then you're down, and then you pay your health insurance because you don't have anybody paying health insurance for you. Now, while you were given the farm, you still have to pay the property taxes on it, which is another $5,000. And then, you know, you're going to have to pay this, that, and the other. You know, even at that, with no production inputs, with no land costs, with no equipment costs, with no labor costs, you got $10,000 to raise a family of four on for a year. I don't think anybody can do that. That's not sustainable.
Right. Right. Good point. You know, and some of you may want to slit your wrists after that little bit. you make a valid point. Yeah, that's just with no production input costs at all, and that's where we are.
Well, sustainable is, you know, I'm the fourth generation, so we've been growing corn, soybeans, raising livestock for four generations. I've got the next generation coming back to the farm. I've got a granddaughter, so that could be the next generation. That's sustainable. We are doing good things with the land. If you look at what the Field of Market study just came out with, specific to corn, the last 20 years, we've reduced soil erosion by 67% per bushel of corn raised. We've reduced the need for irrigation water by 27% per bushel raised. Reduced greenhouse gases per bushel by 30%. We've reduced, there's a couple of the numbers there. I know they're 37%. I lost them here, so I apologize for that. But the fact is we are sustainable. We are good stewards of the land, and so that's a message we need to convey, whether it's Washington, D.C., or whether it's our urban friends.
Interestingly, a 1990 Farm Bill has a very good definition of sustainable agriculture. It's a long definition, but it's integrated system of plants and animals that economically sustainable and benefits the farm and society. Those are a couple highlights of that. But that's exactly right. It has to be economically sustainable. It's not the quaint thing. And I agree, modern agriculture is increasingly more sustainable. But one thing we need to do is we need to have a system of agriculture in place that not just sustains the quaint 160-acre farm, but frankly sustains a population. We're going to double the need of food in the next 30 years, double our food needs, population in the next 30 years. We're going to do that. Let's talk about sustaining people, too. I think that also needs to be sustainable. We need a production system that allows us to do that. Feed, clothe, fuel, doubling the population in the next 30 years.
You know, I think my personal views on sustainability, it doesn't matter if you have 5 acres outside of Portland, Oregon, and growing vegetables for some restaurants, or a 5,000-acre wheat farm in North Dakota. I whatever it takes to live on. I'm a third-generation farmer, and I feel kind of like you that I've figured it out, and I've made some changes to survive and done that many efficiencies. And I think that's what our organization is very good at, is looking forward to, okay, what's it going to take for wheat farmers and all farmers in general to survive?
Well, and that's part of the bad rap that, you know, we've often got is, and I'm glad, Darren, you brought that up, is that, you know, the first green folks were these folks. That's their number one asset. And we had to take care of that. If nothing else, that's what we learned from the 30s. But sometimes we're not given credit for that, and we're the bad people, and all you have to do is watch the movie Food, Inc. or read a press conference here or there, and they don't have a clue as to how much we appreciate the valuable assets that we have. That was kind of a segue. Really didn't have anything to do with what they said. I'm just segueing is all. On this issue of our image, our perception, for years we've always said we were underappreciated. People didn't know our story. And everybody understood that because we were such a small percentage, but we still just kind of moved along. And then with the advent of, who knows, technology, communication, society, whatever, now some people with some crazy ideas or crackpot ideas can promulgate this throughout society and all of a sudden start saying things and doing things about our industry and get an audience. And so we've got a big challenge there, a big issue, and I hate to be cliche, but, you know, you're either part of the problem or part of the solution, but I'd like to take it a step past that. How do we become, in terms of communicating the story of agriculture, not part of the solution, but leading part of the solution, so that the world knows and America knows and our people, the people on the other side of the fence know what our real dilemma is and what our real issue is and what we mean to America?
Well, one of the things I think agriculture needs to do, we all have our own unique messages, but I think it's important for the agriculture industry to get together and work across commodity groups and come up with a few messages that we can deliver to the public. And the example I use is, how many times have you heard the one cell phone commercial, "Can you hear me now?" You keep hearing that message time after time, it sticks. And we have a lot of messages, they're very good messages, but I think we need to focus them more directly and keep delivering that time after time, that we are sustainable, we're good for the U.S. consuming public. And I think that's the key, is to be more focused in fewer messages and keep delivering it time after time.
Rob brings up a good point on messages. And all of you folks in this room, if you collectively pick out a message between commodities, organizations, and deliver that message to your congressman, write a letter to the editor, bring up that grassroots activity, that's how we're going to get a good, strong message out. And the National Corn Growers is developing that kind of a campaign. We're working with the other commodity groups, working with industry, and how we can unify our message and use all of our membership to deliver that message, because we are much stronger together than we are as individuals up on this stage or as commodity groups.
Well, I think that's very true. You know, it has to start with leadership and with the commodity groups. We have a responsibility to educate our groups, our people. But I think more importantly, this needs to be, the message needs to come one farmer at a time, one farm at a time, one family at a time, one consumer at a time. We need a push to where people know us and understand us, they understand what we do. You know, people have this idea of Food Inc. and big corporations and large government payments. Most of you people out here know a lot of these corporations are involved in one. They're families. They're not GM or Ford or something like that. They're a group of individuals in a family that have formed the corporation is just a vehicle for business. And, you know, they talk about huge farm corporations. Well, it's big families that work together
right.
and help each other. And I think we need people to understand what a farm corporation is and that we do this because we want to. I don't know if there's anybody in this room that, you know, if you ask everybody in the room why you became a farmer, why you're an ag, you get a million different answers, but I doubt any of you is going to say, because I can make a hell of a lot of money farming. Mm-hmm. And we get branded that we're greedy.
Right.
And
right.
we're not.
Right. I'd like to add, I think each farmer that's there working on his farm has a tendency to not want to get out and get their message out of what they do and proud of what they do. They just assume people assume that. And like you said, we have a lot of people fighting that. So I think more farmers need to, that's going to be half part of their day's work is defending themselves. And then in the wheat growers, we're doing a few things, a few traditional things, like one, it's a little bit outside the box, but an urban wheat field. We had an urban wheat field in New York where they bought in pallets of wheat growing and had right. harvesters in Central Park. And then this year we're going to do that in Washington, D.C., I believe in September. Have an urban wheat field. Also, the networking, the social media, working on ways to improve that. We're stepping up a communications budget to work on those issues, and then also partnering with some of our providers of equipment and crop protection products and such. So you know, we're looking at every angle we can.
And it's obviously something that's moved up everybody's agenda. It's further up the agenda. It's more important than it ever was. What's that old saying? You know. Everybody thought somebody was going to do it because anybody could do it.
But nobody does it.
But nobody does it because of that mentality. So, ladies and gentlemen, give all these folks a nice hand. You've got great leadership in your commodity organizations. Thank you very much, gentlemen.